Welcome to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The Learning Curve is about helping kids get good grades in school and succeeding in life. It's for all parents, teachers and students, as all of life is a learning curve, and you succeed in life to the extent that you can easily learn. Today's show is actually a bit of a horror story about what goes on in school in the early stages of kids' education, where mislabeling, mishandling, and misdiagnosis goes on, and it's something that all parents need be aware of so that they can protect their kids from these tragedies. To get more information on the material we cover in our shows, you can go to howtolearneasily.com. Or if you have any questions you'd like to have answered, you can email us at questions@howtolearneasily.com. Tonight's guest is Melissa, a young lady who suffered the worst of what the current education system inflicts on our children. Her story should be a wake-up call for all parents and hopefully the establishment. It is a warning to all parents of what they must be alert to in order to protect their children in today's educational scenario. But it's also a story of hope, courage, and the fact that even the worst of the damage can be undone. So by the time Melissa was 11 years old, she had already been diagnosed with 6 disorders, taken 14 different medications, and seen some 10 doctors. Some of Melissa's disorders included Tourette's syndrome, obsessive compulsive disorder, dyslexia, ADHD, and all the rest of it, anorexia, nervosa, and generalized anxiety disorder. Melissa has since been honored by being an advocate for people with mental health concerns by the Tourette's Syndrome Foundation and Mental Health America. She is the author of the book, Nourishment, Feeding My Starving Soul When My Mind and Body Betrayed Me. So welcome, Melissa.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. You're a brave young lady. And I noticed in your book, it's pretty much a horror story of what children go through when they are misdiagnosed, mislabeled, and mishandled in the current scenario in school.
Perhaps yes, absolutely.
you might describe for our audience briefly, for now, we'll get into it in depth, but what was the situation you found yourself when you were first at school?
Well, I began to notice that I was different from my peers in about second grade. You know, that was the year that everybody else was learning to read and they were succeeding in school, whereas I could not read, and I was also starting to experience these involuntary movements and vocalizations, which are part of Tourette syndrome. They're called as tics. And that's also when my teachers began to pick up on that I really wasn't a cookie cutter child. I was in an elementary school that actually asked me to leave because they told my parents basically that they couldn't handle children like myself, meaning that they couldn't help a child that had learning differences. And so basically I was asked to leave. And that's really when a lot of the troubles and issues started.
That's interesting you use the word learning differences. That's a very key phrase rather than learning disabled and all the other misdiagnosis and wrong answers that they're foisting off on our kids nowadays. We often have guests here who use that term as well. It's more accurate.
I really believe so. You know, I don't like to think of myself as disabled. I just have differences.
Sure. In fact, in our book, we make the point that you say, by the way, you say here that you were diagnosed with dyslexia and was called a disability, etc. In our book, we actually state that dyslexia is not correctly understood. And it may well be the mark of a higher level of ability, as a lot of people nowadays are finding.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Albert Einstein, for instance, was dyslexic, and there are so many famous individuals that have dyslexia.
They perform remarkably well in life. They hold tremendously responsible positions in leading corporations. Very innovative people, highly creative, and they actually think differently. You're smiling on that, I hear.
Yeah, you know, I think that our school systems have basically, they're basically trying to produce these cookie cutter children. And when you don't fit into that mold, you're automatically labeled as a misfit or labeled as a problem child. And I just don't think that the school systems are accepting of children that have learning differences or different needs.
The history of what happened to you as a child in school, let's go through that and give folk the full horror story of it.
Sure.
It's like, I wept when I read it, I tell you.
Well, shortly after I was diagnosed with dyslexia and Tourette syndrome, I really began to undergo a lot of internal torment because I basically felt as though that my mind and body had betrayed me, in the sense that on the one hand I couldn't read, and on the other hand my body was making all of these involuntary movements and sounds that I couldn't control. And so that in turn triggered basically obsessive compulsive disorder. I began to sort of try to organize and arrange my environment around me, but inevitably arranging my things in my desk and my belongings just wasn't satisfying, because what I really wanted was control over myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in turn led to basically an eating disorder. I began to control food. And I made up all of these rules for myself about what I could eat and what I could not eat. And this chaos around me was created both within me and internally, because basically I started to be shuffled from school to school to school because schools just couldn't, quote unquote, handle me. After I was taken out of the small private school that I had gone to from pre-K on until second grade, I was transferred to a school for children with learning disabilities. In third grade, I actually had a very good year. I had a very understanding teacher, and I thought that I was finally going to be accepted. But unfortunately, my Tourette syndrome became worse at the end of third grade and the beginning of fourth grade. And my fourth grade teacher was probably one of the worst teachers I ever had. She actually sat me in the corner of the room facing the wall for half the year because I was a distraction to the other children.
I was just going to say, explaining to the audience, Tourette's syndrome is actually one has these body tics and little spasms and sometimes making a sound. Is that the correct description of it?
Yes, it's basically just a neurological disorder, and you do have these movements and you make these vocalizations that you cannot control.
Shall I tell you a true story about Australia and this subject? Now, this might cheer you up a bit and may help our audience. Virginia smiles every time I tell it. In Australia, we give everybody a nickname. You're really not accepted unless you've been given a nickname. All redheads are called Bluey. No logic to it. It's Australia. They're upside down. What can I say? All kids with very white hair are called Snowy. There was a guy who was a good friend of mine. He was an Australian surfing champion as well. And he actually had Tourette syndrome, as we would now say. In those days, it was called St. Vitus Dance. His nickname was Spazza, short for Spaz. I thought you'd enjoy this. Now, this is Australia, right? And there was no stigma, no problem. He was accepted. It's Spaz. Hey, Spaz, come over here, we would call him. So anyway, the year that he won his Australian surfing championship, the newspapers, the headline was Spazza Hurst wins. Totally formal, and that was his name. Everybody called me Spazza because of this condition. Times have changed. The great disappointment for me, being an American and looking at the current educational system, is the way in which it seems to be so fixated on what is wrong, finding wrongness that they then try and mislabel or treat incorrectly.
Absolutely.
You have a story here on this misdiagnosis and wrong medications that cause such horrific side effects. That
yes.
Tell the folks this. This is something you need to know so you can protect your children.
As my Tourette syndrome became worse, my parents naturally turned to my physician, to my psychiatrist, and wanted to do something about it. But unfortunately, my doctors were much more interested in sort of, I don't know, treating me as an experiment rather than as a child, as a human being. And they were more interested in just subduing the tics, getting rid of the tics through medications rather than asking me what I wanted and if the tics actually bothered me. So they began to medicate me heavily. I was given cocktails of medications. I was actually given medications that weren't even approved for use in the U.S. My psychiatrist apparently got them under the table somehow. I was given Botox injections in my face in order to try to paralyze the facial tics, which was all well and good. You know, it worked. But for like about 3 months, I couldn't move my face either. In addition to that, I was also misdiagnosed with an array of different disorders, including the precursors to personality disorder, such as borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder, neither of which I actually have, but the issue with these medications that I was given created such atrocious side effects that my doctors basically thought that the side effects were symptoms, and so they were diagnosing me with mood disorders and treating those disorders and not actually treating the disorders that I had.
Was this the result of the school system putting you into the medical handling, or was this the result of your parents taking you to medical help?
Of course, my school recommended for my parents to take me to psychiatrists, and my mom, being a social worker, she automatically knew that I needed to see the appropriate person. And, you know, my parents were definitely my biggest advocates. I've been wonderful, loving, and supportive parents, but I think that as parents, they were so desperate to help me. So they were literally putting all their faith in the psychiatrist's hands. And unfortunately, the psychiatrist didn't really have my best interest in mind. So I was a guinea pig, and I really began to loathe all people in white coats because I really felt like an experiment. I mean, I was literally put on sort of a pedestal in a room by myself and videotaped for hours just so that they could examine my tics on videotape.
How old were you when this was going on?
I was about 9 going on 10 at this point.
Boy, I bet that created a memory.
It definitely created a memory, and not only did it create a memory, but it also created a lot of tension at home because I really began to resent my parents, especially my mom, who kept taking me to these so-called professionals, who in turn kept giving me pills and force-feeding me pills, and it really created a lot of strain and tension and anger towards my parents because I felt as though my parents had basically turned into my enemies because they were siding with the doctors who were giving me all of these medications that made me incredibly ill and advising my parents to do things like call the police when I refused to take my medicine, which actually happened on one occasion. The police were called because I had locked myself in the bathroom in order to try to evade taking, to escape the medication, and the police basically came to my house and knocked down the door and forced me to take the medicine.
This is the sort of thing that you don't want to put your child through. The great tragedy is that in the current system, when a child exhibits any differences, they begin to be seen as somehow not doing well or inattentive or with some assumed diagnosed condition, which there's a lot of argument and debate whether they really exist or not. And then once the kids are put on this slippery slope, it's a horror story for them, as you're now hearing from Melissa. So we're listening to Melissa Binstock, the author of Nourishment, Feeding My Starving Soul When My Mind and Body Betrayed Me. This is a really gripping read.
Melissa, where is your book available?
It's available at Barnes & Noble and Borders, and also you can find it on www.nourishmentthebook.com. Nourishmentthebook.com.
We've heard enough about the horror story, Melissa. What did you actually do to survive all of this? And I noticed that you're now a very successful student in university, lecturing to various organizations, etc. What's the positives that you were able to make out of all of this?
I think that one of the steps that really helped me get onto a good path was realizing that I'm not my disorder. There's a distinction that needs to be made, and realizing that I'm not Tourette's syndrome, that I'm not dyslexia, that I'm not OCD, and that I am a person with needs and that is valuable, very eye-opening to me. I think that sometimes people that don't experience problems, that they think about that and they're like, well, isn't that obvious that you are a person? And you know, for a long time it wasn't, because I was treated as basically an experiment, something to test, something to try, something to fiddle with. I really didn't feel as though I was a person or that I was worthy of the things that every person is worthy of. And so making that realization, it was really an eye-opening aha moment. And that guided me on to a good path. And that path involved actually taking care of myself, making goals for myself, really trying to pursue things that I think will be healthy and good for me, and setting myself up for success and learning what that entails.
That is actually a very interesting shift in perspective, because I tutor adults who are working towards their GED, and one of the things that sometimes we end up with students who have been labeled as learning disabled when they learn differently is really what it's about. But it's very interesting you should say that, because one of the things that is emphasized is that these people are not their disability. They are not their whatever. They are people with whatever. They are people with, I don't want to say learning disability, but perhaps people with a different way of learning. And that is a whole different perspective.
Yes, absolutely. It really is. And it really helps me see that I might have some differences, but those differences don't make me a bad person. Those differences don't mean that I'm never going to be able to succeed. Those differences just mean that I'm different.
It is interesting. It's not so different, interestingly enough. We were given a statistic recently that something in the order of a third of people actually are what's truly called right brain learners, which if you get it wrong, you try and tell them that they're dyslexic. So it ain't all that different. The thing that is observable about folk who are right brain learners, which is probably a better label, is that they tend to think holographically. Things are not sort of flat pictures. They're actually holograms, three-dimensional, and they think in technicolor pictures, in holograms, not just in words like most folk seem to think. But the other point that we're looking at here is viewing you as a whole person who has some differences. There was a change of philosophy when the new president of the American Psychological Society came on steam back in 1988, from memory. He made the point in an interview that heretofore, psychology and psychiatry were all interested in finding out what was wrong and trying to intervene and fix all these wrongnesses. He said that they had erred, psychologists had erred, in taking their model from medicine. And he posed the question, he said, what we should be doing is focusing more on what are the rightnesses, the abilities, the powers, and the courage, instead of trying to find what's wrong all the time. And he said, we've published, and he gave a figure, it was some 40,000 papers on disability, and probably 1,000 or less on ability. So he said, what we should be looking at is what are the positives, what are the abilities that we can enhance and make more of. What do you think of that?
I think that's a fantastic philosophy. It's really emphasizing a positive psychology perspective, which I think needs to be emphasized even more, because we do use the medical model too often.
Yeah.
And sometimes the medical model can be beneficial because it can inform patients, but I think at the same time, we need to re-emphasize the strength of people rather than focusing on the negative aspect.
Would it have made a big difference to you as a child had that philosophy been in practice?
Absolutely. I think that if that philosophy had been in practice, a lot of the issues that I had, especially a lot of the strained relationship that developed between my parents and myself, I don't think any of that would have occurred, and the amount of hurt that was experienced wouldn't have occurred. I definitely think it would have been beneficial.
The outcome of a different philosophical approach would have actually created harmony and a work with proposition, rather than trying to control and treat something which actually really didn't need treating. So you mentioned that the medications and what they call intervention from the psychiatrist actually caused some real difficulties in your home life with your parents and such. Could you explain that to us?
Sure. You know, as I talked about a little bit earlier, as a result of the medications, I was experiencing an array of side effects. Some of them included rage, mania, depression, lethargy. You know, there are times that I couldn't wake up in the morning. And basically, all of these side effects led to my disgust of medicine. And there came a point at which I was really protesting parents and was refusing to take medication. And that in turn led to horrendous fights between my mother and myself, especially. And we would end up yelling and screaming and fighting endlessly about medications. And there came a point at which I basically thought that I had damaged the relationship between my mother and myself so extremely that it was irreparable, and that I was basically, I guess you could say, damaged goods and unlovable. And so basically, I guess you can say that the fallout from the psychiatrist's directions and the psychiatrist's prescriptions and his demands that I take my medicine, it produced this horrible outcome of my mother and myself continually fighting, and the horrible outcome of a damaged relationship. And I really lost the typical mother-daughter relationship that you generally have. A tragedy, and, you know, something that I have had to mourn because I didn't have that for a very long time.
It is interesting to see that nowadays you've really overcome all of those earlier difficulties. You've got a 4.0 GPA, and I hear you smiling.
Yeah, you know, I think that part of my motivation to succeed is a bit of passive-aggressive revenge against all the people that told me that I can't and that I'm limited and that I'm unable to. I want to succeed for myself, but I also, there's a small part of me that just wants to show them, no, I'm not limited, no, I can do this, and that I am able.
Right, well, you're certainly proving those dunces. Totally wrong, who mishandled, misdiagnosed, and mistreated you. There's a story I remember where you actually had a teacher who was sitting on the kids. Did she sit on you?
This was a teacher. I was in fifth grade at a school for children with neurological learning disabilities. And the way that the teacher disciplined the children and tried to get them under control was he basically sat on them. And so one morning I walked into the classroom, and I'm in fifth grade, and I see my teacher sitting on one of my friends. That was horrific for me to see. And then subsequently after that, my mother actually saw the same teacher run after a child. She was parked in the parking lot. He ran out of the building across, I guess, one of our playgrounds, knocked the boy down, put his hand behind the boy's back and sat on it. And this was a school for children with neurological and learning disabilities.
Yeah. And they let these criminals actually in charge of children. It's been a delight having you here, Melissa. I'm so delighted to see you winning so well in life now and proving those dunces wrong. You've really given our listeners something to be aware of and ponder on. I think it, with you in your book, you're going to actually save a lot of other children the drama and damage that was foisted on you. Folks, we've been listening to Melissa Binstock, who's the author of Nourishment, Feeding My Starving Soul When My Mind and Body Betrayed Me. And what's the website again, Melissa? You know it from memory.
It's nourishmentthebook.com.
Thank you. So thank you for being with us, Melissa. And
thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And I know our audience have benefited enormously from listening to you. Thank you. You've been listening to Roger and Virginia at The Learning Curve. To get more information on the programs that we cover at The Learning Curve, you can go to howtolearneasily.com. Any questions you've got, email us at questions@howtolearneasily.com. Next week's show is on the subject of how easy it is for you to tutor your own child. So for you folks who are wanting to be involved in tutoring your own child, tune in next week to Roger and Virginia on The Learning Curve.